powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we go now.
All right. Now, as you guys know, a while ago we were talking about the potential of Jimmy G here in Seattle, and then it just disappeared because we had kind of settled on, understandably, the idea of Pete Carroll and the Seahawks being set on Geno and Drew. That ship had sailed. However, Albert Breer, on with Mike Salk, said that, you know, maybe there's a chance that things aren't totally over. Take a listen to what he had to say about the reason the 49ers are not cutting Garoppolo.
And by the way, like, I'm half joking about Jimmy, but I will say this. Like, I think one of the main reasons San Francisco is holding him right now and not cutting him is because they think that, you know, if they were to let him go, like, he'd go directly to Seattle, you know? So I think that that is something that could become real depending on how the quarterback situation in Seattle plays out over the next week or two. And then, you know, when or if the Niners are able to get anything for Garoppolo.
So, I mean, it certainly sounds like the ship hasn't sailed on Jimmy G being in Seattle if the 49ers were to release Jimmy G.
It ain't over till it's over.
It's not over till it's over.
And the only time it's over is when Jimmy G is released and somebody else picked him up, or Drew Lock and Geno go out one of these preseason games and just balls out. I think they're always going to be looking at Jimmy G. I think the further you get into training camp, the more you get to know your team, the more they start having expectations, whether they be high or low. If there are higher expectations for this football team, and let me tell you guys, I think they're going to be better than what people think. But if there are higher expectations, then I think Jimmy G becomes more attractive. But it all starts with him being released. Right now, he's listed on their roster as the fourth quarterback on the depth chart.
Ooh, so the disrespect.
They're holding on.
Holding on, but disrespecting. He knows it's over. They know it's over. Now, the question that naturally follows is, okay, well, maybe the Seahawks would bring in Jimmy G, but is he worth it? Like, does he actually make you better? I mean, here in Seattle, say what you will about Drew and Geno. It's not like Seahawks fans weren't also talking about Jimmy G and how he was holding the 49ers back. Albert Breer has something to say about that, too.
He's better than I think people realize. Is he perfect? No. Are there lots of things he did that frustrated the Niners? Yes. You know, he freelances a little bit too much, you know, for their liking. And, you know, like, obviously, you know, there have been the injury issues over the years. But he's certainly been there, and he's played on big stages. And, I mean, I think having a veteran presence like Jimmy in there, if
he were healthy,
two or three.
So saying basically Jimmy G could be worth about two or three more wins for this team if he's here. I mean, that's huge. Two or three more wins on a team where, Bump, you mentioned, I already think the defense is better than people think. I already think the run game could be better than people think. You're talking about a team that suddenly is in the conversation for a wild card in the NFC.
Yeah, they would be in the conversation. And let's not get it twisted. Jimmy G is a better quarterback than Drew Lock and Geno. Even if you think he's not the elite of the elite, he's won more games, he's been to conference championships, he's been to Super Bowls. Is he worth bringing over here for two or three more wins? I'm not sure. I don't think he is. I think that you have to roll with what you have. I think Drew Lock has all the physical capabilities of Jimmy G. With Drew Lock, is more about leadership, learning the playbook. You know, I think Geno could make some throws. Geno has leadership. He knows the offense. He can run all this stuff. But end of the day, I think you stick with the guys that you have. But looking at Jimmy G, you're not a fool for that. I mean, this guy has won some games. But because of where the team is right now, I don't think he is necessary. I think you just continue to build and see what happens.
I do wonder, though. I mean, we're going to get to four down territory in a couple minutes, so we're going to talk a bit more about this. But I would obviously rather see Jimmy G here than either Drew or Geno, and that's not to slight either of those guys. But like you said, he's a better quarterback, and it is more fun to watch a team win football games than to watch a team struggle. And right now, it is weird to go from Russell Wilson being here to quarterback is suddenly the biggest question mark on the roster, while Geno and Drew have been fine. I mean, they were fine in the mock game. Let's talk Drew and Geno, and then let's talk Jimmy G. Let's separate this conversation because, Bump, one thing I've been dying to talk with you about since you've been back is that I am stumped as to why Pete Carroll is stuck on Geno.
relationships. We know that Pete Carroll values relationships. Once you get in Pete Carroll's circle, he will give you opportunity after opportunity to prove yourself and to prove your worth. And I think he trusts Geno. I think he knows that Geno knows the offense. He knows his personality. He's already had a year with Shane Waldron. So that's what I look at. I think Pete Carroll just has some sort of comfort knowing that Geno has been here before and understands how he wants things to roll.
But is Geno that much better than Drew?
No. They're neck and neck, in my opinion. I mean,
watch the mock game.
They're neck and neck.
Then why not take a shot with someone who's younger?
And I'm with you there. But I also think that Pete Carroll's looking at the situation and saying, okay, who gives us the best chance to win out the gate? And initially, you're going to go with the veteran because he's played, what, four games last year, through seven touchdowns, one interception. He just has a better idea of what he can do when the bullets are live, I believe. I think Drew's opportunity is going to be in the preseason game. That's where he overtakes us. Until Drew Lock goes 20 for 25, 220 yards and two touchdowns in a preseason game, I think they're always going to roll with Geno just because of the familiarity. But as soon if Geno starts to struggle, then we'll see some other stuff.
From the 360 on the Mac and Jack's text line, you can join this conversation anytime, 206-421-3776. 360 says, right, Jimmy G will cost the Hawks in the next draft. Now, I want to stress this because I cannot stress it enough, and I'm going to do it again. Whether or not Jimmy G is here, Pete Carroll is not trying to lose for a draft pick.
No, that's not how he works. That's not how he works. And we've said it before, just because you have a high draft pick doesn't mean you automatically found your guy. Now, your chances go up. Obviously, the better players get drafted high. But just because you have a high pick doesn't mean that it's going to work out. How many quarterbacks have we seen come in with all this hype and really not do anything? That's just the NFL. It's a gamble. But I understand the thinking behind it. You want to draft high, get somebody young. He's going to be cheap. You can build around him. You got more pieces. Makes complete sense to me. Just nothing is guaranteed.
Nothing's guaranteed, but again, like I the only argument I can see is you don't want to become what the 49ers were with Jimmy G, which was ironically a good enough team to get to the Super Bowl, and Jimmy G a good enough quarterback to help you get to a Super Bowl, not good enough to win it. And there is a fine line between someone who can manage a game like Jimmy G and be as serviceable as Jimmy G is and someone who can actively contribute and help you win games.
What's tough about Jimmy G not winning a Super Bowl, who'd he lose to? He lost to Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, like one of the best teams offensive we've seen in the last like few years, right? He did have a chance to win a game. I believe it was Goodwin was open. Yeah. He missed him over the shoulder. So, yeah, he doesn't make those type of plays for sure. He's not the guy who's going to drive down the field
but
with 2 minutes left.
That's where we get into the conversation that people always want to have about how all you need is a game manager. The 49ers, all they needed was a game manager with the best defensive line in football. I don't think they had the top-ranked defense necessarily. I think it was New England that year, but they needed the best defensive line in football, phenomenal stable of running backs, great receivers, George Kittle being the do-everything tight end, and Jimmy G still sunk them. Because you don't just need a game manager. That is a farce.
Did he sink them, or did he just not make the play? They're not in the Super Bowl without Jimmy.
The difference
are
in
they
the Super
in that
Bowl?
Super Bowl without Jimmy? You're saying you can just put any quarterback in that offense.
They didn't
and the 49ers
win that Super Bowl because of Jimmy.
Okay, you can say that, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, the Jimmy hate is crazy to me. This man wins ball games.
It's not about Jimmy hate. It's about saying that, like, look at everything that they excelled with, and the idea that Jimmy G, that he's good, but the idea that you had to have everything else perfect, and still Jimmy G wasn't enough.
He lost to the Chiefs. He lost to Patrick Mahomes, to Tyreek Hill, to Travis Kelce.
I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, they lost to a good football team. Now, could they have won that game? For sure. It's not like they got blown
also,
out of this game.
Granted,
either.
Went against a defense that was giving up, what, the third most yards in football that year? That wasn't a stout defense.
Okay. He still went to the Super Bowl.
He did go to the Super Bowl,
but he still won a bunch of games for him.
This is less about what Jimmy G can do for Seattle and more about the idea that I constantly see from people, which is, Seattle doesn't need a good quarterback. They just need everything else to go right and just to find someone. And the only thing I would caution against Jimmy G, the only caution I would make against that kind of quarterback is that I think it is a farce to think that quarterback is not that important. I think it is the most important position in all of football.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I understand the argument of being like, okay, well, I don't want to go with Jimmy G because I don't want someone who's just good enough to get you there but not good enough to win. I'd rather have you lose more and then find that guy.
There's only five quarterbacks in the league that are good enough to get you there and win it on their own. Everybody else, you need an offense, you need a defense, you need special teams. Like, when you limit it football is such a team sport. It's the greatest team sport in the land because you got 53 guys, you got three phases of the game, and all got a hit for you to have success.
Sure, sure.
There's only, what, Tom Brady wins games by himself.
Mahomes. Allen.
Like, there's only so many guys. So if you're comparing him to those elites, then, of course, like, Jimmy's not going to look like he's one of the dudes. But you know that it takes everything working together for him to win. Now, am I saying that you plug Jimmy G over here and you're good to go, you're going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl? No, I don't think that. I think a lot of things have to happen with Jimmy, as with other quarterbacks, for you to be extremely successful. I mean, Dak Prescott, he's one of the best in the league. He's had a good offense and okay defense. He's struggled a bit at times. So it's hard for me just to pigeonhole Jimmy, but I am with you. I don't think that he's like the answer. No.
I guess that's what I'm afraid of, is what I'm afraid of is that with the Seahawks, it'll be what happened with the 49ers, which is that they had a window where they had some of their talent young and healthy, and they didn't have to pay them. Nick Bosa was playing on a rookie contract, mm-hmm. right? Kittle was at the time playing on a rookie contract. That you had all this talent, and that, I don't want to say Jimmy G held you back, because I agree with you in that Jimmy G gets a lot of slander for someone who has been to two NFC conference championships, won one, and been to a Super Bowl. Like, I agree with you on that there is a lot of slander for someone who has a great record with San Francisco. That being said, I don't want Seattle to be stuck in this spot that I think Tennessee's stuck in, and that I think San Francisco was stuck in, mm-hmm. of having everything else be perfect except for that. And that he's just good enough to keep you plateaued.
Yeah.
And I struggle to say plateau, that a Super Bowl is a plateau. It is so impossibly difficult to get there. I recognize how hyperbolic I sound in saying that Jimmy G like plateaued them. I recognize that. But what I'm afraid of is Seattle getting into that rut.
Seattle's won one Super Bowl, been to two, right? Been to three. They've won one Super Bowl.
You're right. Yes.
Haven't been to a Super Bowl in 9 years.
Haven't been to an NFC conference championship.
In nine years. All right, so just like we're talking about the Mariners, about how this is who they are right now. They're a wild card type team. Yeah. I think you got to adjust the way you look at the Seahawks
as well.
That's
a really good point.
It's like, all right, this is who they are. Playoffs is good enough this year. You know, playoffs might be good enough for the next 2 to 3 years, because nothing is guaranteed. So it's all about expectations and how fast you think this team can get back to that NFC championship, which we haven't seen in mm-hmm. so long. So mm-hmm. it's just hard to do. And I think you got to be extremely lucky. You got to have a team where everything's firing at the same time, and you need a quarterback who at least gives you a chance to win those big games you talk about.
That is a good point, as far as being like, before you start wondering how the Seahawks can win a Super Bowl, you need to start wondering how they can get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If Jimmy G became randomly available for the sake of us covering the Seahawks for 17 games, I would say go out and add Jimmy G. I don't want to talk about that many losses. I just want so badly. You know what it is? It's envy. I want so badly for the Seahawks to have a Josh Allen, to have a Justin Herbert, to have a young quarterback to watch, to have a Lamar, to have someone where you're excited about them. It's easy to root for them, and it feels like the beginning of something.
Are you excited about Drew?
No.
No? Not at all?
No.
No? You don't think he's...
No disrespect to Drew.
Five or six games? Six wins? Seven wins?
I don't see with Drew what I do with some of those other young quarterbacks. Granted, people were ready to write off Josh Allen as a bust.
Yeah.
So I recognize that sometimes a quarterback just needs to find himself. But so far, in the limited number of training camp practices I've been to this year, I have not seen something in person to make me say, wow.
Man, I wish we were old enough and doing this job back in 2013 or 12 so we could have gone to practice and see how we felt about Russell at that time. Did he wow anyone at that time? I remember watching him and not feeling the wow factor, but you see how his career has gone so far.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I think with Russell, though, if you go back and watch, granted, these are highlights. Okay, so they're curated. But if you go back and watch Russell Wilson 2013 highlights, the defense was the most important and best part of that team, mm-hmm. followed by Marshawn Lynch, followed by Russell Wilson. Okay. Yeah. So, well, the offensive line and Russell Wilson. So I recognize that Russell Wilson wasn't even the first or second most important thing, but he did have moments where you're like, if this guy were to enter the league now, we'd be talking about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, it's, I don't know. I don't know that he was your long-term answer. Like, I don't know if you were to say, does Seattle get back to a Super Bowl if Russell Wilson's still here? I don't know that I'd say yes.
I got to see this defense. That's what it comes down to me. I have to see the defense because I'm a big believer in this defense after what I've seen so far. Obviously, you got to see them live, but yeah, let's see what this defense does.
All right, I could talk about this endlessly, but we don't have time. This hour, Bump and Stacey brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down this morning on the Salk Show, Brock and Salk special this morning, said the Broncos are not doing, this is wild, 7-on-7s or 1-on-1s. Why is this a bad idea? You're already shaking your head, Bump.
This is madness. Nathaniel Hackett said that's not real football.
What?
I understand it's not real football, but you're learning during one-on-ones. I'm learning how to beat this man. I'm learning how to beat inside leverage or outside leverage or when he's playing 5 yards off. I'm speaking as a receiver. As an offensive lineman, I'm learning how to use my hands, how to out-leverage dudes. 7-on-7, I'm filling the space in a zone when it's a clear passing down and everyone's dropping down into space. I understand the quarterback's not being rushed by a defensive lineman, but now he's learning to go through his checks, and they wonder why it hasn't looked good as of late for the Broncos. I guess I'm getting old and grumpy, but as long as football's been around, there's been one-on-ones, there's been 7-on-7s, and there's been team sessions because you're gearing up for that team session. When you don't have 7-on-7 and one-on-ones, you're not allowing the player to work on his individual craft on how to win that one-on-one battle. I think that's what's missing.
Can I do conspiracy theory time? Curtis, feel free to answer if you want. How much of them not doing this is because Russell Wilson wants team period? Like, do you think Russell Wilson has any influence over the types of drills, literally, that the team is running in practice?
Yes.
I do, too.
I think he has a lot of influence.
I think Russell Wilson is running the ship or running the show. What's the saying? Both?
Both.
He's running the ship and the show over there. I think that I think it's like Russell Wilson's facility.
I'm hearing my man has his own office in Denver.
One Jake Heaps? Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Russell's an office. He doesn't dress with the team.
He has his own office.
I am fascinated to see what Russell Wilson does in Denver because I'm still convinced that Russell Wilson, in Russell Wilson's perfect vision of the offense he'd want to be in, I don't know that he can be as good in that offense as he thinks. And I am saying this knowing Russell Wilson's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between a Hall of Famer that can be Aaron Rodgers and a Hall of Famer that's Russell Wilson in the offense he thinks he can run.
He's extremely ambitious. He's played the underdog, it's got him a bunch of success, but I think reality is going to hit him this year. You're in a tougher division. You're getting everything you want. You have to win now.
Second down. I've been told I'm being very negative today. Uh-oh. I'm in trouble. Second down. A day late. Bump was on a golf tour, celebrity golf tour. Bump.
D-lister.
What was your biggest...
It was the live tour.
Oh, someone said, by the way, you were joking that you were writing 16 and Tyler Lockett was going ahead of you in signing balls. Uh-huh. Someone said you should have written Michael Bumpus 7-10, 10-2. What was your biggest takeaway from the mock game now that we finally got you back?
One that Drew Lock started off hot 10-for-10. He's not getting hit. Guys aren't tackling anybody, so take that for what it is. But he did what he was supposed to do, I guess, to start, but then he kind of faded away a little bit. But Tariq Woolen, I think you guys probably already talked about the dude, but I was extremely surprised with how he played. He did have one touchdown caught on him, but it was a fluke. The ball hit him in the helmet, and Thompson catches the ball while he's on the ground. If I am a DB, I'm not missing any practices because you got Tariq Woolen, you got Kobe Bryant, and these guys are fighting for playing time. Artie Burns didn't have the greatest day, so that opens up the door for more reps by these young fellas. If I'm a DB, man, I'm getting back as soon as possible because these young men made a great impression on Saturday.
Third down. Now, this one's fascinating. ESPN ranked the top 5 universities for each position group in the NFL. So they'd be like, what's tight end U, which they said was Miami? What's DLU, OLU, both of which were Alabama? They had DBU. Surprisingly, Washington, not anywhere in the top 5. Were you surprised by this, Bump?
Now, I am a Cougar, but I'm not a hater. I understand what UW does. And what they do is put out some good DBs. 2020, they had Kyler Gordon and McDuffie drafted. 2019, you had Jordan Miller, Tyler Rapp, and Murphy drafted. 2017, you got Sidney Jones. 2016, you got Kevin King. The proof is in the pudding right there. If there's anything they do well, they win some Apple Cups and they draft DBs. Good for UW. I was surprised they were not on this list. And maybe that's some regional stuff, man. Again, you're tucked away in Washington. People don't really pay attention to what's going on
over
here.
Tucked away in Washington, but I'm sorry. You look around the league, you can see Buda Baker. You can see
Buda.
Two guys drafted this year. I mean, I feel like if you can recognize that Miami is tight end you when Miami hasn't been especially relevant, although geographically I get it. Man, Curtis, just get ready for the classic East Coast bias involved in every... Oh!
This is pairing me against my Husky hate.
Oh, let me say, by the way...
East Coast bias, but I hate East Coast bias! This is more than I hate the Huskies!
This is another thing that's important to note. On this, they do not only have five universities that are the top five universities for that position group, but they also do it by conference. So they do mention the Pac-12. And the school they chose for the Pac-12 for DBU,
like
USC.
If anything, USC's receivers. They put out receivers.
They were receiver U. Wide receiver U was USC. And then they said USC for DBU. Get out of here, ESPN. I'm tired of you. Fourth down. I'm mad today. They don't want to see me today.
I don't want this smoke.
They don't. What player coming off an injury are you most excited to see this year?
Man, I'm really excited to see what Travis Etienne does over there in Jacksonville. I feel like I've been talking about Jacksonville a lot this offseason. I'm talking about Trevor Lawrence, Christian Kirk. But I'm listening to what's happening over there in Jacksonville. The offense is looking good. Trevor Lawrence says his arm feels great. He's understanding the offense. What's going to help a young quarterback is going to be the run game. And I follow this dude on Instagram. I'm watching his workouts. I'm listening to what's being said. And I'm becoming a believer. I'm not saying the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to win the division or go to the playoffs.
I am.
But
no, I would never.
I'm just excited to see what he does because coming out of Clemson, man, Etienne could play. And suffered an injury. So I'm just excited to see him play. And I'll throw Michael Thomas in there, too. He missed all of 2021
right,
for an ankle injury.
That's a good one.
So I want to see those two come back and see how they affect their team.
This is technically we have like 30 seconds left, but I just really like this question, so I'm going to throw it in. It's from a texter.
All right.
By the way, it is August. All of our young local students get moved into UW and Wazoo. From the 253 bump, we're moving my stepdaughter into Wazoo this weekend. Congrats to your stepdaughter. Mm-hmm. Any advice?
Moving her in, any advice, find a group of friends that you trust and click up and hang with them. Make sure you time management is key. You're going to have a lot of freedom. Your mom and dad aren't going to be there to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to do. Time management, get a group of friends who are like-minded and stay away from haters.
That's great, great advice. You should go clip this, send it to her, and just have her replay it whenever she needs to. Curtis, do you have any advice for moving into college for the first time?
Show up to class, I guess.
mine would
don't be... schedule a class before 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Goodness don't gracious. Do it. You're going to skip it so many times, unless you're a morning person.
Even
mine,
then.
I like the idea of making friends. I was very lonely and sad my first week, 2 weeks of school because I didn't know anyone from my high school that went there. Just meet one friend, make friends with your roommate. You don't have to stay her friend forever.
Go to sporting events. You're gonna find
Events.
You're gonna find friends at sporting events.
Or sit in the dorm lobby, have coffee. You're gonna
run
into people.
Seriously. All right. Well, we wish you the best first week ever. Honorary go Cougs. Even though it pains me, I hope you have the time of your life this week. All right. It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. The timeline's coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
All right, it is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. So let's get it started. The long, strange 2022 season for Red Sox pitcher Chris Sale is officially over, though it also ended strangely, fittingly. He broke his wrist on a bike accident. Yesterday. He had already missed most of the season rehabbing a broken rib suffered in a workout during the lockout. He also broke his left pinky during his second start back on July 17th. And now the entire thing ends after he breaks his wrist biking.
You know what we call him?
Bad luck, Chuck.
Can't get right.
Can't get right.
Just can't get right.
I mean,
just not your year. Sometimes it happens that way. Sometimes just things aren't going your way, and when it rains, it pours, and that's exactly what is happening.
Who was a teammate that was like, oh, this is can't get right?
And he had a great NFL career. I've mentioned him before, Chris Ivory. Like, he could never stay healthy at Washington State. He leaves Washington State, goes to a smaller school, gets drafted, great career.
So how about a player you watched, either of you? A player where you were like, this guy, like, see, immediately I would think of CJ Prosize, but that's not necessarily, it's it's more of a guy that gets going and then he just gets injured. CJ Procise like never got going. He had one good game against like Indy or New England, and then that was pretty much it.
How wild is it that Chris Sale gets hurt doing all these mundane activities, and yet the one thing that he did with any sort of violence this year was like destroy that TV in the minor league dugout?
Yeah.
And like he's fine after that, but he falls off his bike, he hurts himself working out, and then takes a comebacker off of his pinky. Like
God is testing you, my friend. Yeah. You are getting tested.
Don't walk around in a lightning storm, Chris Sale. We
all right. Want that to happen. One of my all-time favorite shows, HBO's Hard Knocks, is back in a new teaser clip. Lions running back Jamal Williams is going to make a lot of fans. His huddle speech now going viral. Here's a clip.
Jamal Williams, bring it up.
Well, let y'all know, man, today is the minimum of effort. Do not give up. Do not feel like you're tired. Were you tired? Think of last year and think of that f***ing record. Every time I get tired or I think I can't go no more, I think of that f***ing record. Last year wasn't it. That ain't us. We can make it. Have some heart. I get emotional about this. I'm about to cry because I care about y'all. Do your best. Let's go. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3. Lions.
After we break this huddle, I am going to run through a wall for Jamal Williams. What do you need, Jamal? What do you need from me?
I feel it. And it felt real. That's the thing. I've been in huddles where guys are talking, and I'm looking at my boy like, this guy, what is he talking about? This dude don't show up every day for work. He doesn't go hard for us. But no, Jamal, it felt real. So good for him. And I love Hard Knocks, man. It's one of my favorite shows of all time.
The thing with Hard Knocks, it is one of my favorite shows, but it is so gut-wrenching. Like, there are moments that are really, really funny. Like, God, when Hard Knocks was with, they might have still been in Oakland, but with the Raiders, and it was, God, who was the rookie? They were like the best friends, and they were riding on horses, high-fiving each other. I'm kicking myself for not knowing, right? You know what I'm talking about.
Abram was in
it. It was this really funny scene of the two of them just being like best friends. So Hard Knocks has like really funny moments and stuff that goes viral afterwards. You're all talking about it the next day. And then it has moments where guys get cut or you watch guys get injured. His whole season's over when he's trying to bounce back. Those are the moments where I'm like, I have a hard time. Like my stomach hurts watching the show.
If you are a football fan, you should be forced to watch Hard Knocks because that same player that you're calling garbage.
A bum.
Yeah, like this. Look at all the stuff you have to go through. A football training camp is tough. It's easier these days because the NFLPA has done a great job as far as limiting practices and all that, but it's hard, man. You got 90-something guys fighting for 53 spots, and they're really only fighting for about 20 of those things because there's 20 other guys who are good to go. So, yeah, I love Hard Knocks.
Question for the two of you. Strip away the rules for Hard Knocks. The rules indicate you can't have a new head coach. You can't have been on Hard Knocks in the last 10 years, and you must have missed the playoffs for the previous two seasons. Take away those rules. Any team up for grabs, what team would you want to see on Hard Knocks 2022?
Are we counting the Seahawks in this?
You can count the Seahawks.
Well, I would go with Seahawks, but I think another one I would like to see who he is behind the scenes is Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
Ooh.
Because all of us have no idea what Belichick is like outside of the sideline and outside of his press conferences he does every single week. And we're never going to see the Patriots on Hard Knocks because they're always good.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yes, Denver Broncos. I want to see what's going on over there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I want to see what's going on with Russ and them.
Well, because Russ would be on for the camera, but it would be fascinating to just watch from the outside looking in, kind of having a little bit more context. Yeah.
Well, the Broncos would have been eligible this year had they not changed head coaches.
Yes.
So Nathaniel Hackett being in his first year
ruined it.
Saved the Broncos from being on Hard Knocks this year.
Or ruined it, in my mind. Someone said, is it just me or was the Lions chant from the rest of the team a little too weak after that?
It was a bit weak.
I needed a little more after that, after Jamal Williams gave it his all.
Dan Campbell was probably in tears. He seems like a very emotional guy.
Dan Campbell. You know, I'm not going to mind seeing Dan Campbell on Hard Knocks. I would say the Lions would be one of the three teams that I'd want to see. And I'm going to throw in, I don't want to watch the Rams. I don't know why that would just annoy me. Obviously, the Seahawks might be one of those teams. Man, who would it be?
I'd want to see the Jags. I mean, but they have a new head coach as well.
You know what team would feel dysfunctional? This is going to be out of the woodwork, but the Panthers.
Oh, Matt Rhule.
Baker Mayfield.
Really bad.
The quarterback controversy that's happening over there and the way that Rule's handling it, I feel like the Hard Knocks with the Panthers would be a team where, surprisingly, we'd have so much to talk about.
Didn't Rule make the offense run sprints the other day? Was that him?
Yes. He was the one where Baker Mayfield made a great play, and then they rolled out the red carpet celebration, and they were given a taunting flag, which, first of all, forget taunting flags. And then Matt Rule got so mad he made them run sprints.
You don't make grown men run sprints.
Nope. You don't treat grown men like college players. That's exactly where Urban Meyer failed, yeah, among other things.
He probably forgot where he was and what he was doing. That was his typical reaction. I guarantee you he will not do that again.
No, he should not. All right, last story here in the timeline. Fox Sports, is it Rick Bucher. Rick Bucher, I thought so. So
he's an NBA insider.
He's an NBA insider. Reported that Ben Simmons' Nets tenure is already off to a very rocky start. This is him with Colin Cowherd.
Ben Simmons, they're having a team chat before game four, thinking he's going to play against the Boston Celtics. And from what I'm told, Ben just left the chat. They asked him, are you going to play? Ben left the chat. Like, he didn't even answer the question, just left the chat. And Katie's like, this is what I signed up. Like, this is who I'm playing with?
I'm sorry, but that is peak NBA drama, and I am here for it. I love this kind of reporting on the NBA. There is a group chat that Ben Simmons, a notoriously injured and absent player,
and moody guy,
quite literally left a group chat. It is not used as a metaphor. It is not used as a joke, as like, oh, Bump left the chat. Ben Simmons quite literally left the chat.
That's so soft. Just answer the question. Nah, I'm not going to play, guys. I'm still a little banged up. I'm in a group chat, fantasy football chat, and there's this one dude who always leaves the chat. If you disagree with anything he says, he leaves the chat. Just stand there and fight back. Or just be honest.
Honestly,
I'm not playing, guys.
That's the thing.
It is what it is.
Just say, you know, like, hey, no, man. Yeah, I really want to. You could lie. That's the thing. You could lie. Oh, coach said no.
I mean, I would, but
yeah,
you know.
I would. I tried to get out there. I tried to fake, a test to get back out there.
You know how my back is, guys.
You know how my back is. It's my knee this time. I just, it's just really tough. Someone said, I wish NBA would have Hard Knocks. There's a lot more drama there.
For sure.
Hard Knocks with the Nets. Yo.
All it would be was KD constantly saying, get this camera out of my face.
Hard Knocks.
Get this camera out of my face.
Hard Knocks with the Lakers
Kyrie
last
wouldn't
year.
Be there.
The Lakers no. last year, the 76ers, Hard Knocks with the Nets, Hard Knocks with, who else would I want to see?
I want to see the Timberwolves, man. I like Edwards over there. He would
that'd be a good
entertaining.
One. And they would have had a good story this year.
Yeah,
let's move Hard Knocks to the hardwood. Am I right? Am I right? Or am I right?
You're right.
All right. The Seahawks released their first official depth chart. What stands out and what do we think is most likely going to change? That's coming up at noon. We're going to talk to a Seahawks player, Tariq Woolen, a bit later in the show. Before any of that, though, let's jump back to the Mariners, figure out what's got to get right to win this series against the Yankees. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. It's game two of a three-game set between the Mariners and Yankees. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. tonight. Luis Castillo on the mound. Pre-game show starts at 6 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. Luis Castillo, by the way, it's going to be really nice, fun to see him out there again. Maybe one of the things that most Mariners fans are most excited for, and what's been kind of a tough set of games post All-Star break. I was thinking the other day, by the other day, I mean literally the day prior to this series opener against the Yankees, in which the Mariners were just absolutely crushed. It's really hard to keep pace with the best teams in MLB. It feels like you take one step forward, Machanegra's home run, and the Yankees take three, right? Like, it just feels like once those kinds of teams, the Astros, the Yankees, you don't really play too many National League teams, but Dodgers, Mets, whatever it is, that once those teams get going, if they get out ahead of you, two runs, three runs early, it feels impossible to catch up. Thankfully, you don't have to play any more of those teams, really,
right, for
the rest of the year. You have a chance to get right, to really turn things around here. So what else can the Mariners prove as we round out this season?
What else can they prove? They can prove that they can fight with the big dogs, right? Not necessarily win the fight, but be in it. You ever watch a UFC fight and You know, I was watching, was it Nunez versus, forget the young lady's name from Spokane.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Nunez was messing her up, but she kept walking forward. She kept getting up. And at the end of the fight, I stood up and I clapped. I'm like, look, Nunez won that thing, but old girl was in the fight. Like, she did not give up. That's all I want to see from the Mariners. Like, look, you're not supposed to win this series. You weren't supposed to win the last time you played these guys, but you found a way to do it. I just want to see them look like they're in the fight. And with Luis Castillo on the mound here pretty soon, I think they have a chance to be in the fight. And then you never know, because once you're in the fight, all it takes is one little haymaker. You might catch them slipping. So,
all right. John Morosi, MLB insider, who's regularly on weekly with Wyman and Bob, says this is what the final 2 months will show.
I think there's still a really good final 2 months for them. And this is where, in Scott Service's mindset, he excels in understanding how to handle young pitching. He obviously is a catcher by profession. He's been a manager now for a number of years. He comes at this from a player development background with both Texas and the Angels. He gets it. And if you were to look around Major League Baseball and say, if you're going to have to lean on some younger pitching down the stretch, who do you trust in the American League to keep that group healthy and rested, where you can maybe peel off an out here and there and an inning to make sure that they're really good to go by late September? And I think Scott is that person. So they've got the right manager. They're playing well. They're, I still think, one of the best teams in the game since around the beginning of July.
Julio will be coming back, but the Mariners may never be able to really punch with the heavyweights offensively, right? That being said, it is hard to look past this club and say they don't have one of the better rotations on paper. The last 2 months, they can finally prove that.
On paper, it looks great. We've also seen them struggle, right? Logan hasn't been the sharpest his past couple of outings. Robbie Ray hasn't been the sharpest. Yeah. But we've seen moments. And now it's about just sustaining this thing, man, and finding someone else. I think like one more pitcher needs to take a step forward for them to really be in this mix, because the best offense is a great defense, and pitching is defense, right? You stop guys from scoring, stop them from getting on base, then they're not going to put up any runs. So, yeah, I think the rotation is good, but I feel like there's still room left to improve.
Curtis, when Brandon was on with us earlier, he said that it is too early to worry about Gilbert, that he personally isn't. Are you?
I'm starting to get a little worried. I mean, his ERA is up now around 3.5. He hasn't been as sharp as he was prior to the All-Star break. Now, his last two games were against a really good team of the Yankees. So, you know, who among us is going to have a good start against the Yankees?
But against Aaron Judge.
Yeah, against a lineup chock full of superstar players. But, I mean, he is tasked now with pitching some really big innings in situations that he's never been in his career before. He's never pitched in this high leverage of games before, whether it be in college or in the minor leagues. I mean, this is just his second year in the bigs. I think people kind of forget that, especially with the start of the season that he had, where he was American League Pitcher of the Month in April. But right now, it does feel like he's kind of coming back down to earth a little bit. And you do wonder if maybe the Mariners are considering piggybacking him with George Kirby or piggybacking him with Marco Gonzalez. You know, it's not as cut and dry as it was, I would say, a couple weeks ago when it comes to Logan Gilbert.
This has less specifically to do with the starting rotation, but more to do with what you can prove in the final month or two of the season, which is that you can beat up on teams that are bad.
Yeah, you got to go out there and you got to beat up on the A's, the Cleveland
Guardians.
Thank you for that. You have to, if you're not the best, you have to beat the worst to find yourself in the wild card spot. So just do what you did before the All-Star break. Beat the team you're supposed to beat. Now, 14-game win streak, I don't see that happening. That was beautiful to watch. Thank you, Mariners, for providing us with all that great content. But now it's just be who we think you are. We don't necessarily think you're a team that can expect to beat the Yankees every time you go out there, but we expect you to beat up on the Rangers, the Angels, the A's, the Nationals. Just go out there and do your thing.
Also, make sure you beat up on those teams, not only because it helps your own record, but because it worsens theirs. And some of those teams, Cleveland, one of the ones that's competing with you for that final wild card spot. Cleveland, by the way, also has a pretty nice schedule. They're going to play the Detroit Tigers for, I think, 7 games. That includes tonight. They're in a series right now against Detroit, and then they have another series against Detroit. So maybe the best thing you have going for you is the series that you have against Cleveland. right? Where, yeah, like, not only do they have an easy schedule, but you can take some of that into your own control by beating them, by sweeping them, yeah, which is the best thing you could do for your
season. Got seven games coming up against those guys, right, man. Get it done.
All right. Let's jump to Seahawks here. They released their first official depth chart. We'll tell you what it looks like next.